The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. Friday, April 19th, 2024. I am Seth Leibson. Mr. Bill, good to see you. Young David, David Dahl, my producer. Good to see you, brother. Feels like we haven't been in touch in a bit. You've been busy.
It's only been 24 hours.
Well, yeah, but you've kind of been...
What a difference a day makes.
You've been kind of reticent and taciturn over the last couple of days, specifically yesterday. You're preparing for a big golf tournament.
I am. I'm not participating in the golf tournament, but our sister station is putting on, which means I'm putting it on.
Yeah. Yeah, you're kind of the golf monger here for this event on Monday. Miss Terry, it's good to see you. You know what, Don? I mean, fun Friday, if we can. I know there's a lot serious, and we'll get to it. But I do think it's important to lighten up a little bit on Fridays. And maybe this isn't fun so much as just me processing a resentment. But I don't know, what, about 6, 7, 8 months ago, we got some new suits here upstairs. And it dawned on me, every really good idea I proposed to the previous management that got shot down has been equally shot down with the new management.
Like what?
Any number of great ideas. The idea of the dog and the dog we all take responsibility for, that we get a station dog. And every week someone rotates taking him or her home.
Oh, look, 2 weeks in a row, Seth. And that must be a new record.
And it's a Leon burger. The other thing, I had an idea. I want a station-wide, an office-wide PA system, an all-call button, so that when I need to address everyone on an issue of manners or etiquette or something, I can just push a button and do it. Because I have a lot of things to say about what goes on in the kitchen. I have a lot of things to say about people who bother you at 3:05.
Why don't you just get a megaphone?
I have a lot of things I got to tell the office. It would be easier than one at a time with everyone to just push a button. Anyway.
A big megaphone. And then you just talk to people.
No, I want a white box in the Bob Newhart show.
It's almost like we have a 50,000-watt megaphone going out to all of Phoenix every afternoon.
I know, just no one in here. And what I want is a white box, like one of those intercom boxes probably made by Motorola or Bell Labs or something from like the Bob Newhart show, where you just push and you can talk to everyone on an all-call. That's what I want.
That's cool.
All right. Mr. Bill, we're going to do, and you, young David, we're going to do at some point what I learned this week. That's one of our features on Fridays when we remember it. Let me start with the hard stuff. And, of course, that means what happened in the Middle East last night. There's a lot to say about it. Happy to take your calls on it. Dr. Andrew Bostom put it this way, and I think this is right, on Israel's strike in Iran. Israeli aircraft fired 3 missiles from outside of Iranian airspace. The target, an air defense radar site that helps protect Iran's Natanz nuclear facility in Isfahan. The initial assessment is the strike took out the site. The strike was meant as a signal to Iran that Israel has the capability to strike Iran but isn't looking to escalate the situation. I think that's about as clear and concise as you can get. There was a lot of speculation as to how Israel would respond to the fusillade from Iran earlier, or whether Israel would respond, if so, how and when. It would be nice if this is the alpha and omega of that entire chapter and episode. And I think it was not anything I certainly would have predicted, but I think it shows some interesting and smart thinking. So what Israel said to Iran is, we can touch you. We can get to you. What it said about where that nuclear site is in Isfahan, in Natanz, is we're not taking out that. We're just taking out the air defense systems. You know what that means, right? That means if we ever wanted to take it out, the path is now so much the clearer. And if it, not us, U.S., some other ally perhaps. And the interesting thing about it is that Iran is saying it was a failure. So I think by Iran saying it was a failure and it didn't do anything is Iran's way of saying that no further action will be taken. Israel launched and failed. No reason for us to escalate. Israel can take the victory lap and send the message that the leadership of Iran certainly had to receive, assuming they're not in purblind denial of reality, and the world can go on to live another day. Because I know people are very, you know, obviously and rightfully so, worried about, you know, this tinderbox. And the only way a tinderbox doesn't explode is if the rational actors do the most rational thing they can do in a sea of irrationality. You cannot say millenarian regimes like Iran, chiliastic end times regimes like Iran are operating in the realm of reality. They're not. So you have to have some adult in the room that's willing to, like a bully attacking a pro wrestler in a bar who could easily snap that bully's neck, just push him down and sit him down and say, don't get up again, you know, rather than creating an entire melee. In the world of terrorism, in the world of sleeper cells, in the world of theological justifications for the takings of life, civilian and innocent life, and in the world of nuclear power, you have to have some maturity. You have to have some realism. You have to have some normalcy. And we're beginning to see an even sharper relief for those that aren't themselves purblind to what's going on in the region, what the rational and the normal are doing, and what the irrational and what the abnormal are doing. What is confusing to me is how many of our youth in this country and adults can side with the abnormal. I was listening to Dennis talk about this earlier today. He said there's nothing sadder to him than seeing this inversion of the evil receiving. Well, it's not what he said, but it's what he could have said and certainly implied. The evil receiving the countenance of the just here. That's what Elie Wiesel said was the real definition of confusion. Real definition of confusion is when good and evil are put on the same plane. Good and evil are put on the same moral plane, and the evil receive the countenance of the just. The Talmud has an interesting take on that. He who shows mercy unto the evil, unto the wicked, will someday be wicked unto the merciful. That's what happens in these inversions, and that's why you're seeing what you're seeing in these inversions. Okay, that's issue one. Happy to take calls on any of that. 602-508-0960. Hopefully this all passes soon. I, as many of you know, like to talk about the durables, the things that don't pass soon, the things that don't add to the frenzy, but if not dealt with, will lead to more frenzy. Unsettled basics. And there's a piece in the Wall Street Journal today that I think gets us to some interesting durables that I've been speaking about with people this week, including a little bit with Tina Hillstrom and Brandy Barclay earlier and a few others in the week. Our family and faith staging a comeback. Perhaps it's always darkest before the cultural dawn, James Freeman writes. And yes, perhaps it is always darkest before the cultural dawn. I just don't know if we've hit the darkest point yet. That's the question. I don't know if the Stygian darkness has completely had its say. But he writes, few babies and sad, lonely adults may not seem like the ideal ingredients for a cultural revival. But some cheerful champions of marriage, family, and faith are finding new cause for optimism. Their buoyancy comes from evidence that their ideas work, and also a sense that cultural elites, having tried plenty of ideas that don't, may finally be willing to consider practical solutions to society's problems. Let me pick up on all of this when we come right back. Let me also offer up our phone number for anyone who wants to weigh in on anything on their mind, including what we're talking about or what you'd like to talk about. That's why we're here. 602-508-0960. No closed questions in an open society. No closed questions on the Seth Leibson Show. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. We'll get back to the cultural issues in just a moment. The most important voice is always yours. Let's go to Dave in Surprise. Hello, Dave. How are you, sir?
Very blessed, teacher, and yourself.
Thank you. I feel the same way.
Yeah, blessed and highly favored. That's my response, typically. So my call is related to culture. It's a culture war. It has been since well before I woke up, and that wasn't until 2019. But my question is, as you can probably see it on the board, have the legislative branches completely dismissed we the people? Is our system completely broken? And I'm gonna offer that I think that is part of the culture war that we've very clearly experienced and recognized since Somaliopolis burned in May of 2020.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it took me a second. Sorry, it's been a long week. Somaliopolis.
Sorry.
No, yeah. Don't be. It's clever. It's good. It keeps me on my feet. Yeah. There's an interesting. I don't often say good things about Peggy Noonan. 1 in 10 columns is really good, and 9 in 10 are really bad. Today she had one of the 1s in 10 that was really good about the quality of our leadership and our elected officials and those who who represent us. You know, she was talking about biographies of great shapers of history, and you know, the calibers are much different now. You know, the kind of leaders we have are not the kinds of leaders we used to read about and honor and esteem and say, now that's a statesman or that's a world historic figure. And we're kind of shy on that. We don't breed them as much as we used to, or at least we don't favor them as much as we used to, or they don't run as much as they used to. It's one of those things. But it's a fine line, too. Let's just talk this out a little bit, Dave. It's a fine line, too, between assuming good people in legislative and elective office, assuming that. It's a fine line between whether they are to represent the people or exercise their own independent judgment and let the people decide whether they made good judgments or not. Right? This is the old Edmund Burke line from his address to the sheriffs of Bristol. You owe the people not just their will, but your judgment. And so, you know, if they are in continual disregard of what's best for the polity or the country or the community, then you got to throw the jerks out. You got to. But if they are making wise decisions and they are leading us to the right places, maybe we give them a little more latitude. Sorry, go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
No, I think the quote maybe is bums. You can say bums on Friday, right?
Okay, yeah, you can say bums on Friday. No, I was looking for another B word, but you got me there. Okay.
It's all good. Okay. It's all good. Yeah. I'm looking at what the Senate did recently, refusing to deal with articles of impeachment.
Yep.
And then also the House of Representatives at the federal level. Yep. You know, Mike Johnson's been in the position since October, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
One of his early commitments was release all the tapes, single subject spending bills, blah, 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 no more CRs, blah, 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 blah. And what does he end up doing? He relinquishes the power of the majority, as thin as it was, and there's lots of reasons why it may have been thin. He basically relinquishes it to the other side. So it's like we're in British Parliament, and we're being governed by coalitions now, coalitions of people that I'm going to offer hate we the people and don't respect what we want and what we demand. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate. I live in CD 09, and I call and speak to a representative for Congressman Gosar every day and remind them of our relationship. He is my servant. He works for me. I'm part of We the People. I'm a educated, passionate voter, very involved, a precinct committeeman, and he needs to toe the line and do what I say. And it's the collective me, not just me in particular. And he seems responsive to that, but I just don't think most of our establishment class politicians do, and I don't think that they care to. There's zero accountability and really no consequences for them. I'm not sure what else to do. But I stay motivated and active. We went to a couple of events this week, one in Vegas, one here in Phoenix to see General Flynn. So we're continuing to stay active, but it seems like we don't make many ripples in the pond anymore.
Well, there's some. I want to do a little bit of a glass half full. You're privileged to have a congressman who represents your point of view. Not everyone has that. And, you know, there is the first rule of politics, too, that not everyone's going to agree with us. And that's going to be true in the country as much as it is going to be true in any given district. Gosar's in a safer district than a lot. Some congressmen, you know, on the Republican side win by a point or two and have to, you know, make slightly different political, realistic, prudential judgments. I'm not totally against them. I'm not totally against prudential judgments because that's how this country got made in the first place. Prudential judgments. Think of the fight over slavery, for example, and how we accommodated that serious issue, which could have prevented us from becoming a country, by putting it in a prudential area of ultimate extinction, not immediate extinction, so that we could get buy-in. That would be one example of this country being founded on prudential judgment, prudence. I always liked the line that sometimes it's not a defeat, it's an advance in a different direction. And sometimes we have to be flexible that way. Mike Johnson is an interesting case study. He's an interesting case study because I know he's not giving the Gosars everything they want or even some of the fundamentals of what they want. On the other hand, you're not going to find a more conservative, ideologically conservative Speaker of the House or anyone else who wants to do that job, by the way. So, you know, what we've got to do is what you're doing. Get involved. Be a PC. Young David, my producer's on his way to becoming a PC. I'm a PC. Get involved at every level you can and stay active and hold their feet to the fire. If they don't hear from you, they think everything's just fine. So I'm glad they're hearing from you. I don't know what more to say.
Yeah, we keep doing what we can do, right?
Yeah, we keep doing what we can do.
The small victories that we get.
It could be worse.
And continue to press.
It could be worse. I mean, it's a thinly divided Senate. It's a thinly divided House. Thank God we have the House. And I think, you know, we build on what we have rather than engage in suicide missions. I'm worried about that sometimes. I am.
Would you mind diving into the constitutionality of the Senate refusing to hear the articles?
I don't mind diving into it. I would love to hear your opinion. Yeah, sure.
Because I think it's a total relinquishment of their duties.
Yeah, I think it is.
I thought it was pathetic and embarrassing.
Yeah,
sorry,
it's pathetic and embarrassing, but it's not unconstitutional, you know, unfortunately. The Senate can set its own rules, and they set up a lot of these rules that don't really exactly comport with how we learned about government working in Schoolhouse Rock or in civics class. There's a lot of rules in the Senate that stymie majoritarian sentiment. Maybe the Senate itself was designed to stymie majoritarian sentiment. But in this case, they relinquished their duty. Their duty was to hear what the House gave them. But it's not unconstitutional. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Doug is in Maricopa. Hello, Doug. How are you, sir?
I am just fine. And in tune with your show today, I just want to express I try to live my life in gratitude. I'm totally blessed both in family and in my life. But you know, I think all of us can surmount much in our lives if we try to have an attitude of gratitude. It's a way to assault all problems and live daily in enjoyment of the simple beauties around us.
Yes, nicely put, sir.
Yeah. I also was wanting to talk because the other day I was talking with great passion, and I hope I didn't sound angry. By your response, it might have come off a little angry, but believe me, it wasn't. It was totally contrived. It was trying to express a tremendous passion because I believe one of the greatest obstacles to the salvation of our country is going to be the right's willingness to see the problems in front of them as problems, not see what's left of what was good and say it's just fine, which we also heard in the same day, everything's fine, you know. And I said, that's a great example of the problem. But here's every bit as great of that, because this goes hand in hand with this, is that we have to realize as Republicans and conservatives that you can actually have different opinions on this one thing. Hey, everything's fine. Hey, we got problems. Two different strongly held opinions, and still say that the individual I'm disagreeing with is one of the finest human beings I've ever met, or not met, but heard, and who I go out of my way to listen to because I have such great respect to. Mm. And that we can't sit there and get angry and you know, tear each other apart because we are ultimately, in the end, hurting both of us. And let me give two big national examples of this. There's a representative who's resigning from the House. I forget his name.
Mike Gallagher.
And he's more the establishment, you know, type that I try to oppose. I probably agree with him on 85%. Oh, my God, I don't even agree with my own kids that much. But he is being so bitter and petty that he literally held off resigning until he went past the date that another Republican could be put into his spot. And therefore, he's thumbing his nose and hurting the party, making us one more person down, closer to not having any majority. Mm-hmm. And that kind of pettiness sabotages our movement. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, on my side, where I want people to attack it and see a problem and do it, the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Matt Gaetzes and everything else, they look at people like, you know, the more establishment types, the House Speaker and everything else. We get so bitter and petty that we're going to kick them out instead of looking at the long-term gain of saying we need both sides to hold each other's hand and say on 80% we agree and we'll work out the differences very vigorously and vocally. But we need to win elections and not be throwing rocks at each other that can hurt both each other.
Let me try this. Thank you. Let me just try this. I have a guest coming on, and this is a shorter segment, so you're welcome to call back on any of this. But
sure.
Honest question. Do you really, in your heart of heart, think we can get a more conservative/right-wing Speaker of the House than Mike Johnson?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
That's the answer to everything.
That's it.
That's it.
It's style points.
Yep.
It's that one thing that I keep arguing about. But we have to put that aside and say, I like the guy, you know?
Yeah.
And he has a hard job that I wouldn't want if he gave me $1 million.
And seemingly no one else does. They want the MTGs want to get rid of him, but they don't want to run themselves, and they can't find a candidate who can get more than 20 votes.
Well, and how are they going to – because if they ran – they might make me happy, but they're going to lose a significant portion of others. And we're in the same boat.
I love you, man.
So we have to.
I got to run.
Yeah.
Can you call back
with
more on this? I know you got more in your tank.
I just have
the tyranny of the clock. Thank you, Doug. Have a blessed weekend.
Well, welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. When Bethany Mandel tells me about someone interesting and important, I usually pay attention, and if I don't, I do so to my peril. She was telling me about one Lori Lowenthal Marcus and a great organization called the Deborah Project, which is focusing on what's going on our campuses, particularly with Jew hatred. It is a delight to welcome to the show Lori Lowenthal Marcus. Thank you for joining us, Lori.
Thank you for asking me.
You betcha. Say a word about what the Deborah Project is, if you don't mind.
Of course. The Deborah Project is a public interest law firm that asserts and defends the civil rights of Jews facing discrimination in education. K-12, undergraduate and graduate schools, teachers, parents, students, faculty members.
Fantastic. The website is deborahproject.org if you want to learn more or help out. How old is the Deborah Project, Lori?
It's 6 years old.
6 years old. Did you ever think you'd be as busy as you were the past six, 7 months, or as needed as you were the last 6 or 7 months?
Oh, gosh. I had no way of anticipating anything like this. I know things have been bad on U.S. college campuses for Jews for a long time, for up to two decades, but what's happened since October 7th, which is unbelievable that that was the trigger, has been unrelenting and horrific.
You and I share, and I think a lot of us share, a sentiment that universities still matter, whether we would send our kids to particular ones or not. They matter because they reflect and shape the culture, and they certainly shape the future. I'm thinking about Columbia University, particularly right now. It's the most recent one in the news, given the president's testimony at the House yesterday. But one of the things that's so interesting to me, Lori, is how ham-handed these presidents are. But that's its own problem. More interesting to me is these elite universities, and you've been to them. I mean, you went to them as well. They have really tight filters. It's hard to get in. They screen. I don't know what the ratio of applicants to applications and admittees are, but it's got to be in some cases 1 to 300, 1 to 5,000. This is who these people wanted. They wanted these haters, evidently. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, there's no way that you're wrong, given the enormous voices they have, these students have, and the proliferation of students with this kind of inclination. But it does only take, you know, a small critical mass, because you have so many followers, people who have no understanding what they're saying, what they're talking about. They're being coached either by faculty member or the few thought leaders on campus to say certain things. I mean, the chants are infantile and completely meaningless to the people chanting them. So you have a lot of sheep, and too many wolves were allowed in. I hope that there will be an effort to make a change. In fact, as we know, all of education has taken a dark turn recently.
Yeah.
And so they may have been looking for specific characteristics that some of these bad boys and girls share in abundance.
When you have Jewish college students that are basically run off the campus when they're shouted "F the Jews," when you have them attacked by stick stones and fists, when you have them falsely imprisoned by making them unable to escape a certain room that they have to retreat to save their lives. This is something that would not be tolerated with any other ethnic minority, one. Two, is there a legal recourse that you and the Deborah Project can take?
Oh, yeah, there is a legal recourse, and it hasn't been explored fully sufficiently. We just began litigating in this area of the law, and there are stumbling blocks, because Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act is what governs discrimination in education. But religion is not a protected class. So people said, oh, well, Title VI doesn't protect Jews. This is an area like every other area in the civil rights arena that you have to be aggressive and creative in order to push the protections on the groups you represent, and that's particularly true with Jewish students. Mm-hmm. So we do have a lot of tools. We are spending tremendous amounts of time educating. It's not just on the college campuses. It is K-12 also,
yeah,
where it's really, it's endemic. And so you have to educate the parents, you have to educate the students, and then you have to represent them and you have to guide them. And then once they realize, okay, they really don't have the agency to protect themselves, it's like, you know, I always call the five stages of grief. People want to take care of things themselves, and then they finally, after they've been pushed around and ignored or worse, they realize, okay, let's take legal action. Yeah. And that's where we
that's
are.
That's where you walk in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good, Lori. Thank you. Yeah, to some people, it's kind of a curiosity that you have these highly enlightened or theoretically highly enlightened, I don't know, societies, the elite campuses, and then you see this medieval behavior, a medieval thought, and you wonder what the hell happened here. How are these two lines crossing? And then it dawns on me a little bit. I don't know. It's the story of civilization and its heights of culture and Jews generally, isn't it? I mean, there may not have been a more advanced civilization than 1930s Germany, in a sense.
Exactly.
Right?
That's exactly right.
It's not
right,
a new story, I suppose.
It's not a new story. It was surprising then. It's still surprising now because it seems so illogical. But it is the case, and for some reason, Jews are the favorite scapegoat of those in positions of power or people who have been told they're powerless. So who do they take it out on? The Jews.
Yeah. We have 2 minutes. Tell the audience what you would like them to know about Columbia or anywhere else.
Well, I'd like them to know that people they must stand up for themselves. They must speak out. They can't be pushed aside. It's true on college campuses. It's true for faculty on college campuses, graduate schools. It's true for parents of students in K-12 schools, because if you don't stop people from walking all over you, you will be walked over and your children will suffer. Mm-hmm. So it's essential that everybody get up on their hind legs, all the Jews who have been standing up for everybody else for such a long time, and say, no, you must respect my rights as well. You must respect me, and you must stop treating me differently. The administrations are treating the Jews differently. Free speech when you attack Jews, and microaggressions are protected against every other group.
Yeah.
So those are the things they have to keep in mind. And there
good
is help.
You.
There's legal help.
Good. Let's give it out again. DeborahProject.org. Deborah is obviously DeborahH. DeborahProject.org. Lori Lowenthal-Marcus, thank you for being with us. Thanks for doing this. Let this be a down payment. We'll stay in touch. I have a feeling we're going to need to.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Good night.
You bet. Good night, and thanks for coming on. All right, I'm Seth, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Portions of this show brought to you by our friends at YRefi. They have an offer of a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio that invests control and flexibility with you. There are absolutely no fees with YRefi. With YRefi, you can turn your income on or off. You can compound it whatever you like. And with YRefi, there is never an attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. But best of all, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or call them at 888-YREFI24. Young David, anything on your mind? Now is the time to speak or hold your peace.
Now is the time for all good Americans to come to their aid at their country. You asked me what I learned this week, or at least you indicated you were probably going to ask.
Yes,
me
I always like
this
asking
week.
That, yeah.
I've learned that Robert F. Kennedy stands for nothing. And I'm sure I would love to expositate on this, but we don't have a lot of time. But his campaign just released about a minute and a half video of himself and his running mate, Nicole Shanahan, saying why they are neither right nor left nor centrists. That they're just going to take the best of every party.
Oh, good.
It's like, you know, C.S. Lewis called this frame of thinking in a religious concept. He called it cafeteria Christianity.
Oh, okay.
You can pick and choose, and you can go in there and say, "I want the squash today, and I don't want the green beans today, and I'd rather have a Jell-O salad to go, or whatever else." Cafeteria politics. Yeah. You know, we're just going to take the best of everybody. We're not right.
The funny thing
but
about
we're not
that,
left either. The funny, but we're not centrist.
The funny thing about that is the cafeteria doesn't usually have the best food.
Well. It was a metaphor.
No, but I mean, the point here is
where are all the good automats? The days of the automat are gone.
Yeah, I know. I love those. A Touch of Mink is the best movie on automats, right? What is it? Hodart and Hart Restaurant, something like that. Hart and Hodart. It's an East Coast thing. You ever seen A Touch of Mink with Doris Day and Cary Grant? Watch it this weekend. You'll like it. You'll like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm actually going camping this weekend.
Stop it. Yeah,
I am.
You have work on Monday. You're going to get eaten by a bear or a Sasquatch. Don't do it. Camping is a bad idea. Here's how bad an idea it is. We've built houses. That's why. As Jim Gaffigan says, we built houses. When you go camping and you put up your tent and you zip it, why do you do that? It's to keep the other animals from getting in. It's just a less good house. If you have an RV, it's often a less good house. Sometimes it might be a better house. I kind of want to do that RV trip. There's no reason to go camping any more than there's a reason to go barefoot running. All right, we'll be right back.
The Kennedy-Shanahan ticket is neither right nor left, nor are we even in the center. We're here to...
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.